everybody just about ready?
Sure.
Okay. Okay. Would you like to share? Okay, thank you. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our meeting of March 7th, 2017. We met in closed session tonight, and I'm going to read two resolutions that were made in closed session, in addition to discussions of employees and also anticipated litigation. During closed session held earlier tonight, upon a motion made by Board Member Marilyn Roger, seconded by Board Member Walt Millar, the Board adopted a resolution pursuant to Education Code Section 44951 that authorized the District Superintendent or his designee to notify Pacific Beach Principal Number 38286 of reassignment to a classroom teacher position effective at the end of the 2016-17 school year by a roll call vote of 7-0. And also, during closed session held earlier tonight, upon a motion made by Board Member Ellen Sheffer, seconded by Board Member Jim Quisenberry, the Board adopted a resolution pursuant to Education Code Section 44929.21 that authorized the District Superintendent or his designee to notify Special Education Teacher Number 82759 of non-reelection of employment effective at the end of 2016-17 school year by a roll call vote of 7-0. That is all that happened today in closed session. And now we move on to 4.01, which is a consensus of order of business. And do we have a consensus among the board? Yes, we do. And next we have at 4.02, approval of minutes of the meeting from February 16th, 2017. Take a motion.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We also have 4.03, approval of minutes of the meeting at 21, February 21st, 2017. We have a motion by Mr. Buckland and seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We're moving right down to the student representatives to the board. Carolyn Pettyholm. Hello.
Hello. Good evening. So in slow high news, starting off with our sports. So to begin the trimester, we have JV and varsity tennis beat San Ynez last Tuesday. Boys and girls swim and dive beat Morro Bay last Tuesday and competed in this weekend's slow relays. We also just had a meet, so that's why my hair is wet as well. Softball beat Orchid last week and Morro Bay. Baseball had their black and gold inner squad game, and they traveled to Fresno this weekend to play a tournament. Boys volleyball goes undefeated right now, and they have a game tonight at home, and JV right now is 2-1. Varsity boys golf, they defeated Morro Bay, last week, and so did JV. I know. And right now, coming up on March 15th, is our Winter Sports Awards banquets. Moving on to ASB news, last week was our finals week, so ASB decided to bring on some therapy dogs on campus during Wednesday at lunch to try to ease the stress of finals. Also, to ease the stress, we provided yoga on Thursday and Friday in between our 15-minute break period so we could ease the stress and kind of clear our minds for the next final. We also, last week, helped publicize the final study night that was put on by Mrs. Sawyer, the librarian at Slough High. Coming up on March 25th, we have our Baile de Primavera, which is going to be a dance put on by the ASB, MECHA, and FNL all together. It's kind of an inter-club committee dance. And during third trimester, we've decided to start something called Intramural Sports League. So every Monday night, students and staff, they can form a team of five students, and it's going to be volleyball and Ultimate Frisbee. That's going to be happening. So once volleyball ends, Ultimate Frisbee will be starting. So it basically gives students an opportunity who are unable to play the sport because of another sport or because of classes or other organizations a chance to kind of get more involved. Moving on, choir had a concert on March 5th, last Sunday. They had the Spring Concert Choir in collaboration with one of the SLO local community choirs that went well. Theater, they just had their Footloose tryouts, and they recently began the practices, and the show will be in April sometime. Dates have not been announced. Coming up is a Very Potter musical, and the dates will be March 16th through the 18th. So there will be no charge on the tickets, so go out and support the theater and Very Potter musical and Footloose coming up. And last but not least, in miscellaneous, Jake Peterson, a senior, advanced to be a finalist for the standing with the National Merit Scholarship Program. So that's excellent. And last but not least, Black and Gold Golf Tournament is coming up on April 10th. I believe previously we held it at the Cypress Ridge Golf Course in Arroyo Grande, but now it's going to be at the San Luis Obispo Country Club. So it has been moved. That's it for San Luis Obispo High School. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Betty Holm. Mrs. Shepherd?
I attended the event with the concert choir mm-hmm. when they sang with Canzona on Sunday, and it was a really love. They were amazing to
Thank
see.
You.
Yeah, it was really wonderful.
I'll pass along the word.
Yeah.
Thank
was,
you.
It was lovely.
Carolyn, you can, of course, stay and chat with us if you'd like, or you can go home and dry your hair and do your homework. Tough call, huh? Bye-bye. So we're moving on to correspondence, and there was no official correspondence received, but did anyone receive anything by email that they would like to report? Seeing no one, we'll move on to public comment. This is the time during which we make the opportunity available to you to comment on something that's not on the agenda. Seeing no one offering those comments, we'll move on to the superintendent updates. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so a couple of things under the business and budget update. One, school services has requested community-funded districts to sign a letter of support for AB 235, which basically exempts community-funded school districts from the cap on reserves. So that's something I went ahead and signed and sent in today, so that'll be going to our legislators to hopefully move that forward. As we've talked about the reserve cap and the issues with that that they present for community-funded school districts. I don't know if the board knows, but we do have our CISC health alert. So we have all of our school district employees, I believe even family members, as well as board members, can sign up, and you do a quick kind of health overview. They give you information. I believe they give you a $20 card for attending those things. And so it's just a nice kind of a quick checkup for people that's easy to have done. I believe they're going to be at the district office all day Friday, so you can easily get an appointment there. But I think they do also take, if you're able to stop by at some point, they do allow walk-ins as well. And that's normally how I do it. The last thing is we've Mr. Plaza and myself have received several letters, I'd say three or four, from community members on the coast concerned about us cutting down all the trees at Morro Bay High School. So what I would tell the board is actually those trees fell down at one of our recent storms. So all the trees that currently are being taken care of at Morro Bay High School are all trees that fell during the storm. We had several trees fall during the storm. So we are in the process of cleaning those, dealing with them. But we also have an arborist that's going to come out. So currently along the whole side of the parking area there, we have the cypress trees, kind of an L-shaped. One of them fell and smashed one of our students' cars right down the middle and actually hit some of our solar panels. So we are going to have an arborist look through those to make sure that they're safe for kids. Right now we've kept that all cordoned off, kept kids from parking near those. And so the same arborist is going to be going out to all of our school sites actually and kind of doing specifically because of the drought, because of the intense rain that we've had, some of the other issues, going to be looking at all of our campuses for safety. So one of the caveats that we hear a lot from the community is their concern for trees. And so our response a lot of times, we love trees too, but we also love kids. And we love to keep our kids safe. So that is our number one priority in these situations, is to make sure our kids are safe. And every tree that falls, you know, we are going to try. I mean, these recent ones are kind of, some of them are in weird places, but the trees that are in the front, trees in the quad, we're going to replace all of those trees. They're just not going to be trees that grow 100 feet tall. So they're going to be, you know, trees that kind of fit the motif, will bring some greenery to the campus. So just for the community members that are concerned about that, that is our plan. That's how we're progressing on this issue. And we'll continue to update the board as we find out more, especially once the arborist takes a look at the reports.
I have a tree question. It's my understanding that most of the trees that fell were non-native species.
Yes.
And will the trees that we're replacing, will they be native species?
Not necessarily. I'm looking at Mr. Palazzo as he shakes his head no.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
But they are called Monterey cypress, even though they're non-native. But and the trees that fell on the north end of campus, which are really kind of out of the way of most transportation stuff.
Yeah.
Are we just going to do what we usually do with a lot of that stuff there? Is just sort of, I mean, they've been cut.
We've actually decided, Mr. Quisenberry, to clean that area.
Oh, you really did? Okay.
Yeah, we are.
Okay.
We're going to clean
right.
those up.
In time. I mean, there's no rush.
No, they're not as much of a concern as some of the other areas on campus that took down electricity, those types of things. But we just actually had a meeting on it, and in lieu of just letting it be kind of a hazardous, you know, fallen tree area, we have decided that we should clean that up.
My grandson loved going through there and climbing over all the down trees. So, but I agree, it needs to be dealt with.
Yeah. Mrs. Roger?
I'm just wondering about I'm sure the arborist can tell if a tree has been stressed by the drought, and then, or
we'll see.
Usually,
yeah, hopefully.
Can tell, or often. But the tree that went down at Del Mar was an apparent, to all appearances, a healthy tree.
Seems so.
That just came down.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming we'll take down any tree that is questionable. We'll err to the side of caution based on the arborist report.
So, yeah, I mean, that would be my recommendation. If they're going to, if again, I think safety of our students is foremost.
Yeah.
So if it means that we take down a large tree and we plant another tree that's only going to grow 15 feet tall instead of 100, that's probably in our best interest as a district. So but I want to wait until we get that arborist report, talk to them about it. What do they suggest? What are their, you know, there's all those things. On the coast in particular, too, we follow all of the Coastal Commission rules for nesting and birds and all the things we have to do. We ensure that we're following all guidelines in those areas. So these are actually fallen trees that we're dealing with now. So if indeed we do need to, for safety reasons, take down trees, that'll be something we'll make sure we follow all, you know, steps that we have to.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
And Mr. Miller.
Just a quick arborist anecdote. I said to my brother, who's a retired arborist, I said, don't you wish you had your shingle hanging out now with all these trees coming down? He said, no, I'd be too worried that one of the trees I looked at fell down.
So. Well, for all the people, too, that think that this is a boondoggle for all of the tree companies, it is. But the fact is they probably make more money trimming the trees and maintaining trees than they do actually cutting up trees that have fallen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's not something that where they're going to want to go out and then the arborist themselves is not somebody who actually will benefit from saying that the trees need to be cut down, because they're not going to be the ones actually doing the cutting of the trees down. So there'll be a lot of separation of powers and that way checks and balances as we move through this process.
Mr. Pinkerton, don't touch that dial. We need you to talk about Measure D update. Kim. Oh, excuse me, Kim. I'm sorry. I jumped right in.
No problem. Happy to share three things with you tonight. So, first of all, this is just a reminder about parent conferences that are occurring this week for elementary students. So this is an excellent opportunity for teachers and staff to connect with parents and have the opportunity to work together as a team for the benefit of the students. So great opportunity this week. And thanks to our elementary teachers for all the effort it takes to prepare for that. Just a reminder, we will update you with open house dates. So funny enough, that's right around the corner. So we will keep you up to date on where those dates are landing. Also tomorrow, we do have this Superintendent's Student Senate. So that's an opportunity for us to meet with a wide representation of students from our five secondary schools. And we'll be able to gather feedback and ask questions about our LCAP and gather information from them. So that'll be a great opportunity to get some valuable feedback. That will take place tomorrow, and then we'll be able to follow up with them in April. There'll be a student survey that takes place after that, and then we'll be able to gather back with those students and have another opportunity to gather feedback. So looking forward to that.
Thank you. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so in terms of Measure D update, we've been having weekly meetings with Acme Construction DLR Group in terms of our design build projects of both San Luis Obispo High School and Morro Bay High School, kind of moving forward. In particular, focused on the 100 building at San Luis Obispo High School, because it is the, you know, kind of the main, you know, cost of both of those campuses. So they've come up with some good ideas in terms of cost savings already in terms of their first initial looks. And so those are things we're trying to implement and look forward as we move on with design. Chevron is going to be coming out to San Luis Obispo High School, it looks like over spring break, to do some basically tests, looking at the fields there. So this is the issue that we have in terms of potential oil underneath the ground at San Luis Obispo High School and those fields. So that is what's delaying partial our pool project on that campus. So it is great that they're going to come out, they're going to start that process. So we hope that we'll be able to rectify that very soon as we move forward. Lastly, we have two meetings coming up. I have a CBOC meeting, my Bond Oversight Committee meeting will come up soon. We'll be kind of giving them an up-to-date budget look in terms of what we have spent on Measure D dollars. They'll get kind of a project budget summary analysis, as well as we'll begin to look at some of the summer projects that are about to come forward. Right soon after that, I believe we have the our own study session where I'm going to have staff go through the same kind of analysis, where we're at, what's happening, as well as, you know, the summer projects that are going to hit and kind of what our plans are as we move forward over the course of the summer. It will be a very busy summer.
Any questions for Mr. Pinkerton about Measure D? Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. And now we move on to 8.01, and Ms. Lang is here to talk to us about our second interim report in our budget.
I am. It is that time of year when we present our second interim financial report. This feels way too close. This gives the board an opportunity to look at our financial condition as of January 31st and compare it to where we were as of October 31st. Make sure that we can meet our financial obligations for the next 2 years and to approve all the budget transfers that we've made since the first interim as of October 31st. So a lot has actually changed, and yet, could you go to the next slide, Kim? And yet the change of the ending balance really wasn't very significant. We had quite a few new grants that we received in revenues. You can see that our state revenue went up by $827,000. That was for the second year of the Career Technical Ed grant is in there. We received some money for, I guess I should put on my glasses, special ed mental health funding. We think we're going to get more money for that. We never really know until the end of the year whether we're going to get it or not, but we're hopeful. And in local revenues, you know, those always go up as the year progresses. So we have billing accounts in there. We also received some more funding for CTE revenues and for some of the other CTE grants and the PEG grant. Could you go back a slide, Kim? Thanks. So the overall increase to revenues was $1,409,000. And, of course, when we receive new revenues, especially in grants, we're going to offset those revenues with expenditure budgets. So you can see that the books and supplies and services and operations both went up significantly, and that's mostly due to these new grants and to the billing accounts that are usually for field trips and other things related to school sites. So overall, our ending balance went up by about $39,000, which is good. And maybe now
just a little technical difficulty.
Makes it a little hard, yeah.
Solved.
On the expenditure side only, please. If you go to the next slide now, Kim. Thanks. This is going to be short and sweet this time. As always, we like to compare where we are as a basic aid district to where we would be if we were LCFF. And we changed our 16-17 amounts to our current second interim estimates. So our property taxes include only our property taxes and also the transfer out to Bellevue Santa Fe. So that's what the in lieu is. That's our transfer out. And then the LCFF transition funding, you can see, is still quite a bit less. We're still about $9.5 million basic aid over what we would be as an LCFF district. As you can see over the years, next year I think the gap funding rate is lower. That's why you see an increase there. But throughout the years we're going to see that probably diminish. But it'll be many years out before we become LCFF. Unless something changes. Next slide, please. So for future considerations, our property taxes and our projections include a 3.5% increase to Diablo. It also, 3.5% increase and the Diablo depreciation amount. As you may have heard, the governor is preparing for another economic downturn. We'll see what happens with that, but we need to be prepared. As you know, Diablo brings in about $8 million towards our property tax revenues. At the same time that's decreasing, we're going to see increased rates in our PERS and STRS and health and welfare. Based on our second interim projections, our general fund salary and benefits is at 86% of revenues. However, without continued cuts to personnel, this percentage is going to keep going up. And our current balance in Fund 20 for other post-employment benefits is $8.2 million. That does not include a transfer in from the general fund. We'd usually do that at the end of the year when we see what our balance is going to be. Our current actuarial puts our unfunded liability at $16 million, and that will be done again this fall, so we'll get an updated amount from the actuarial this fall. And with that, I'd be happy to open it up to any questions.
Well, we're going to, Mr. Buckman.
No, we're going to.
We're going to start with the board.
We're going to just ask.
Well, I think the way that we agreed we would do it is we would ask questions of the staff, then go to the public, and then have our discussion. Then close the public comments. Refer any questions that the public might have to Dr. Prater, and then have other discussions based on our questions that have been answered and the public comment.
Okay. Julie?
Hi.
Great job,
Thank
as
you.
Always. Gets easier and easier to understand. I was looking at, I think it's called the summary. It's the second interim report.
So down at the bottom.
The
narrative part of it?
Yeah, the narrative part.
Okay.
Because I have nothing better to do than read.
Good for you.
And so
That's
I have
obvious.
Five questions.
Uh-huh.
That's better than 20, Walter. Okay, so I just have five questions.
Sure.
This one's kind of mild, I guess. On page 2, second interim budget summary, the batting cages show up in the expense table.
Right.
And I'm just wondering whether I thought those were coming out of Measure D. So
was part of the athletics budget, and this was just replace batting cages at San Luis High School.
Okay.
It was an unexpected expense
Good.
That the district
Good.
Picked up.
just trying to get as much in Measure
right.
D as we can.
Yeah.
On page 8 on the interim report, there's a table called Other Funds. And I have to tell you, I struggled with this one. I got my calculator out, but I couldn't get it right. So in the Fund 20 column, it shows $60,000 in the top line.
Right.
And then it shows $1 million. Looks like $1 million coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And then the bottom line is shows a net decrease of $940,000. So I can't work that $60,000 into this. So if you could help me on that.
Okay. The $60,000 at the top is the interest that we earn on that fund.
Okay.
So that's
okay.
The balance. That's the interest we earn on that balance that sits there.
Okay.
So then the net amount would be the $1 million minus the $60,000.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So that, I'm sorry. Thank you. I thought I had to go back to the fifth grade to catch up. On page 9 of the same report, in the general fund summary, in restricted end balances, suddenly there's the I haven't seen this in the budget lately. It's the public education government money. It's called PEG. It's provided to us, I think, by charter. Am I right?
Yes. Charter pays the city, and then the city has this fund, and we just recently got an update from them on what they have in this fund.
Okay.
And so we budgeted most of that to be used this year, but we probably won't use it all this year, so some of it's in the ending balance.
Great. Okay. And so, can you tell me, or just tell everybody what the PEG fund is used
for? It's public education, government access, so it's Channel 21, I believe,
right.
Educational programming, so it has to be used for things that are related to educational programming.
And my understanding is we're using quite a bit of it in the district to fund Liz Moore's type programs and other programs where the kids are getting access.
I am not sure about that.
Okay.
Do you know?
A lot of it is related to video production, so
right.
If that's what you're thinking, career
yeah.
technical education, it
right.
can also be utilized at the at Laguna, I believe, has access to it as well. So some Laguna, I believe, has access to it as well. The city's set direction of who can access it, and Chromebooks have been used with that video, recording and opportunities for kids to have green screen and opportunities like that.
Okay, so that's great. I mean, it's really exciting to see that back coming back because, sorry?
Number 5.
let me make sure I got, I'm on number 5 now. On page 9, the second interim budget general fund summary, I just wanted to thank you for the description on the Group 7 definition on the flexible resources. In there, mm-hmm. in the flexible resources is something called instructional material realignment. And I noticed that over the past 2 years or up to last year and up to this second interim, we spent $30,000 out of that account. And it's got a fancy name and it sounds like it's good for kids. So can you explain it?
It does have a fancy name, and it is good for kids.
Good, okay.
If you recall, in 2008, 2009, the governor said that there were a lot of restricted resources that suddenly became flexible. We could use it for any purpose, and we have decided to sort of keep this money reserved for textbook adoption.
Right.
So it just kind of sits in our ending balance until we need it to buy textbooks for textbook adoption.
Okay. So it's not – so when it's in the flexible account, we're not using it – so Fund 20 is, I think, flexible, right? We can borrow against it. We're not using mm-hmm. this for other programs or saving it for some...
Not at the moment, although it is flexible. It's unrestricted. We
right.
don't have to use it for textbook adoptions. It just seemed wise to kind of put it aside for that.
Okay. Going down to question 6. Sorry, Walter. On page 4, this is on form 011. So what this really comes down to is I really have one major question. I think it's line item 6690. It talks about drug, alcohol, tobacco, and there's nothing funded in there. So are we getting, it used to be, I don't know if this is the same thing, toupee money? Is this the toupee money?
It must be related, although I think the toupee money had a different resource code.
Okay.
And no, we don't get it right now.
All right.
We haven't gotten it for quite a number of years.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Is there anyone else with a question? Would just like to go to the public. Does anyone have any comment they would like to make?
No.
Thank you very much. Sorry. Thank you, Ms. Lloyd. Yes, so sorry.
I'm sorry, just one final thing. I just want to thank Julie and Ryan for answering the questions that I had so that we could get it down to just these few. And I thought, while I got good answers on these, I thought some of them were important to get out in front of the public. So thank you very much, Julie, for your help today.
It is a resolution. So this is a resolution.
I move resolution 16-16-17.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar, seconded by Mrs. Sheffer. This is a roll call vote. Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisengrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Passed 7-0.
Thank you. And we are moving on to item number 9.01, which is about our 90-10 dual immersion program at Pacheco. Hello, Mr. Mayfield.
Good evening. Rick Mayfield, principal at Pacheco Elementary School, and I'm here with some staff members to share with you an update on our 90-10 program. We're in year two, and we're very excited to share some of the goings-on. This is what we're going to cover tonight, 90-10 implementation timeline, to let you know where we've been and where we're headed. Some student data for kindergarten and first grade to let you know where our kids are at. How we're integrating our district curricular initiatives, reading units of study, writing units of study, with 90-10. It's a lot of work to do that. So the curricular initiatives that our district have were not designed for two-way immersion programs. And so there's a lot of work on our end to make them fit into a 90-10 program. And then we want to cover some planning with you because I believe we have some cutting-edge, excellent planning going on at Pacheco Elementary School, and we want to share that process with you. And then lastly, ELD. It's related to the planning. There's no kit out there that you can buy that fits exactly what you're doing, and so we're designing our own curriculum there. And it's really excellent, and so we're going to share a little bit of that with you as well. Okay, so as I mentioned, we're in year two of 90-10, and kindergarten is starting to feel, after about a two-year process, we were up here 2 years ago to get the approval for 90-10, they're starting to feel like things are in place, the program is moving along, they're comfortable. We fully integrated 6 units of science and social studies. The district requirement is 1 unit of science in NGSS this year, and we've got 6 units integrated into our kindergarten classrooms and first grade. In first grade, it's year one, and they're kind of reading the chapter the night before they have to teach that unit in math kind of thing. So the planning is happening right before the teaching and ordering of materials and that kind of thing. So first grade is putting in a lot of extra work this year to make that program happen in first grade. And Connie Reynoso, who was previously our coach, is in the classroom as a first grade teacher and leading that effort at first grade. And she's going to share some information with us in a moment as well. And in second grade, we've already started the long-term planning process. We've laid out what the year is going to look like next year, and they're beginning the unit planning so that they are ready on the first day of school with fresh curriculum that fit the 90-10 model. And then we're also beginning the planning for third grade, which would be the following year, and we're going to start that on May 9th. And Lisa Stevens, our instructional coach, will lay out the year with them so that they start to feel comfortable with what it's going to look like when the program gets up to them so that they're prepared for that when the time comes. So a little bit of data. What we're looking at here is last year's 15-16 first grade data. Trimester 1 Spanish, BAS. And what we're doing is we're comparing the old 50-50 model to the current 90-10 model. So this is this year's data, trimester 1. This is last year's data, trimester 1, in first grade. And these are English learner students only. Okay? And basically what we're seeing is a very similar results, right? So about 60% are reading first grade material, and 40% are still reading kindergarten levels A through D. And this year in the model, about 57% are reading first grade material or above. We have three students reading at second grade level, and 43% are still reading at levels A and D. So the model did not change significantly for English learners. It's still Spanish literacy first. So this is not surprising. We would expect to see similar kinds of data. And there's really no statistical significantly difference in those numbers that you see up there. Okay? This is second trimester, so that's, you know, current data, very recent data, first grade, Spanish BAS. So we BAS all students, kindergarten and first grade, in Spanish because we're teaching them in Spanish. This would be English learners over here. This would be English-only students over here, okay, or native English speakers over here. And what we see is about 81% of our English learners are reading first or second grade level, and about 8 students, 19%, are still reading levels A through D in Spanish language arts. For our English speakers, we've got 77% reading first or second grade in Spanish, and still 10 students, about 23%, that are reading levels A through D. And we're very happy with this data. We think this is solid. And we're really seeing some amazing things. We're going to share some of that with you in just a moment on video. We'd like to show you what that looks like in the classroom. So, Kim, if you could hit the Spanish video link.
¿Qué te gusta leer ese libro?
Hay muchas páginas.
Hay muchas páginas, Isa.
Hoy es día número 113.
¿Dónde es que empiezan los números?
De arriba.
¿Dónde es que empiezan los números?
De arriba.
Si es que quieres hacer uno,
debes acordarte de empezar desde arriba. De arriba.
Uno.
Y luego tiene que mira a las estrellas. Después tiene que agarrar la blanca y telescope and put it away. I like this part. It's my favorite. Al final tiene que a dormir. Así es como las estrellas.
That's her on-demand reading, writing sample.
Cuando él come, cuando él canta, él canta.
Tiene cuatro patas. ¿Quién es el más mejor amigo de los humanos? ¿Quién mueve la cola porque está feliz de verte? Es un perro. En este libro vas a aprender sobre perros.
A mí me gusta español en la escuela Pacheco porque amaba el español y porque que yo quiero ser bilingüe.
Cool. Yeah. That young man in kindergarten, the first week, he didn't speak any Spanish coming in. The first week of kindergarten, he decided he was going to be the translator for the teacher. So as Mrs. Iron was speaking Spanish, he would just tell everybody whatever came to his mind. What the teacher is saying is, and about half the time he had it wrong. It was pretty comical, but really amazing to see the progress. So Mrs. Reynoso is going to share a little bit about how we've integrated our district initiatives with 9010 Mom. So this advances the slide.
Thank you.
Okay. And you can do that one.
Thank you. Well, I could go on and on about that because to make what you just saw happen takes a lot of work and collaboration. First of all, just the reading units of study, where the writing units of study came first. And it came first all in English, adopted by the district, but we are, you know, teaching in Spanish and the curriculum isn't in Spanish. So you translate as you read, basically, the night before. You jot yourself down some notes. And all teachers do this. And then if you're an English language arts teacher, you have this really nice, beautiful list of books that you should purchase. But you may get that same list in Spanish, except it'll be probably a quarter of those books will be translated. And you're really looking for authentic text as well, and that list doesn't exist. So as you're figuring it out, you're sharing it with your partners and saying, hey, this book would be great for this unit. And now, you know, in integrating 9010, when Lisa Stevens talks about how we're now, you know, adding NGSS, now looking at those units and saying, wait, what NGSS topic would fit perfectly while we're teaching the informational unit? What would fit great while we're teaching the narrative unit? So it's work that continues. The same thing with those writing units of study. They came with great checklists that didn't exist in Spanish. So three teachers at Pacheco got together, translated that, put extra hours in, and then we had a K-6 checklist ready to go. Years later, this year actually, those checklists are now available in Spanish, but Pacheco has had them since year one of them being of the district adopting that curriculum. As to the report card, when the report card was translated into Spanish, it was translated for all of our schools, but not for you're teaching Spanish language arts. It's translated as if you're teaching English language arts, and it said it was a translation. You know, Spanish was a translation. So there's some things that don't translate. Common Core does, for the most part. You know, we're teaching all Common Core reading and writing. But when you're teaching short vowels, long vowels in English, that doesn't translate to Spanish. Pay very close attention to the vowels, just the vowels. And syllabication is huge in Spanish. Not as big of a deal in English as it is word families. So that's one thing. And then we also add work to ourselves. Because, you know, when we were translating now just the Pacheco report card, kindergarten teacher, first year of 9010, she said, well, now we're getting this Pacheco Spanish report card, and it's great. But I'm looking at the narrative, and my kids, kindergarten kids, are doing great with their content. But they're telling the story in English, and they're sounding out in English because it's week 5 or 6, and they don't have enough Spanish yet. And I really would hate to put a 1 there when their content is so amazing, and they are, you know, you see the content there. So we talked about that and the fairness or unfairness of that, and then we gave it some thought, and we said, wait, we need an extra language box, a box that says, this is how that kid writes his narrative. This is the content grade, and this is what language he's giving it to us. He's giving it to us in, and that made all the difference for two reasons. One, you're giving parents like real information about where their kids are. The other, you're giving the parents and teachers where are they in their language. So same kids who were narrative 3 on grade level, but content was a 1 because it was all English. First grade, I can tell you because my classroom is the first grade classroom. All kids, except for that 1, is getting a 3 in language or 4. 3 meaning mostly Spanish or all Spanish. And the 1 that I have that it's not yet a 3 is a 2, and they're mixing. And it's a few mixing, not all. So I don't have any 1s. So that's another data for us as teachers and for parents. So we add in extra work for ourselves, but to make our program successful. Lisa will now share.
So along those lines, we decided to also look at our thematic units. So we know that teaching works best and students learn best when things are tied together. We know that we don't have enough hours in the day to teach everything that we need to teach. So we really wanted to look at teaching in thematic units and integrating those units into other subject areas. So we're not just teaching something over here in Spanish, something over here in English, and something over here in writing. How do we tie that together? So we looked high and low for curriculum in Spanish that could tie all that together, and it doesn't exist. So we rolled up our sleeves and said, once again, we're going to do this because this is what our students need. This is what's right for students, and this is what they need. So I'm going to walk you through a little bit of what we did and what we're doing to get grade levels ready for 9010. So what we decided to do is make 6 thematic units based on NGSS standards and the social studies standards. This took a lot of work, and there was, you know, teachers, the famous first 90-10 meeting that we had where some veteran kinder teachers came in and said, here are my thematic units. I've done this for 20 years in Spanish. They're awesome. You're going to love it. We'll put the 90-10 stamp on it, and it's great. And we said, well, actually, this is our chance to change things and make sure we're aligned to NGSS standards. Those are new standards that might not fit exactly. And there were some tears at times of, but this is the tree unit that I've always taught, right? How can we give up the tree unit? Well, if it's not related to those standards, we're not teaching it. We have to be aligned. So the first thing that we do with a grade level as they're transitioning is we put out this big yellow sheet. It's a big butcher board paper. And what we do is we put all the constants up at the top. So that's the curriculum that's given to us by the district. So it's the number corner. It's reading units of study, writing units of study, the math curriculum. We know we have to teach those in certain trimesters and certain months. We're not going to move those around. We want to stay aligned with the rest of the district. But what we can move around is the NGSS and the social study standards. So down below the little boxes that are hard to see, but those are the social studies and science standards. So what we do then is we look at, okay, let's look at these NGSS standards. Where would this fall where we could integrate it into what we're doing with writing, where we can integrate this into what we're doing to number corner? So again, we're not doing 10 different things, but we're aligning it all together to the best that we can. Sometimes it doesn't just quite fit, but we're trying to make it work. So an example right now, kinder right now is studying NGSS climate or weather, but they're also doing it in their opinion writing and writer's workshop and in their number corner in their calendar. So we have that theme or that thread that goes through the entire day. So that's kind of the year-long sequence. And then that goes to that big butcher board paper, then turns into this nice year-long scope and sequence that teachers use for planning. So it has all of their curriculum going across the top, and the first column where it says unit planning, that's that social studies or NGSS units that we talked about. And again, as Rick mentioned, that the district, you know, mandated for us to try one of them. Well, we did all three FOSS and then three social studies. And, you know, later it came out that some of our teachers said, wait, did the district say we only had to do one? We said, not for Pacheco, right? We're just going to go for it. So we did all six this year in our 90-10, first in kinder and first. So then from there, what I do with each grade level on the next slide is then we go into actually planning a unit. So what that looks like is I meet with the grade levels throughout the school year, and then for second grade, I'm going to meet with them for a week over the summer, and we take each individual unit and go through and plan it together. So we might take a unit on earth science for NGSS. We spend the morning as a grade level collaborating and diving deep into the standards. To me, this is some of the best professional development that teachers have. They come out with a knowledge of the standards that I've had teachers that have taught this grade level for 20 years and come out and say, you know, I never really looked at the standards in this way before, or collaborated and talked about this, that I never really realized we need to cover this other part. So we spend the morning just going through, what are the standards saying? What are the guiding questions that are going to guide our instructions? What are the I can statements that we want students to be able to do? Then we look at vocabulary. What are the tier one and tier two words in Spanish that we want to make sure students achieve within that unit? So once we get that done, then we go and look at our curriculum. So then we pull our FOSS boxes out and say, what do we have in Spanish that will support us in that unit? So we take whatever we can from FOSS, but of course there's some holes, right? And that's where we have to plug in our teacher-made resources. So by the afternoon, what we do is we divide and conquer. We have a couple teachers that go and they go off and make songs and chants that are related to the key vocabulary that we've done. We have another group that goes and makes mentor texts, again, focusing on those vocabulary words that we've talked about. We have another group that goes and looks for mentor texts in Spanish to support that unit. Another group that's planning activities. So then by the end of the day, we have a unit that's planned with all of these different chants and songs and materials. And then this year, another one of our focuses is taking it to another level and connecting this to English language development. And Tara is going to talk a little bit more about our planning with English language development.
Good evening. My name is Tara Clapham, and I'm the English Learner Specialist at Pacheco. So moving on to ELD, English Language Development is a critical component of the 90-10 program.
And we really need to maximize the limited time that we have for ELD and really deliver a high-quality program. Really what it breaks down to is we have about 30 minutes a day for ELD. So it's got to be great. High-quality instruction that's tied into grade-level content and also tied directly into what they are learning in Spanish. We also take a look at basing everything through our planning within NGSS standards and social studies standards. So previously, ELD was sort of taught as a separate curriculum. Now it's all taught through the content, which is marvelous, and we see how much the children benefit from it and enjoy it. Because when we're engaged in content, then we have lots to talk about. So it's very productive for language. And they don't have a fractured program. It's all integrated. So we have that content and language integration, which is really powerful. Here is our ELD lesson planning template that we use. Excuse me. At the beginning of the year, Lisa Stevens, Dawn Addison, and I sat down to create this template for ELD, and essentially what you see the colored items listed up there above, those are the ELD standards, and we put them up there as a checklist to ensure that our students are receiving all the ELD standards and that the students are that we're meeting the students' needs. Just briefly, on the left-hand side column, it's all about interacting in meaningful ways, and then the next column over is how English works, which is really the grammar and the nuts and bolts of language. Moving on to the next column, we also tie all of our units and our lessons into prior learning. We use GLAAD strategies. We have frames, questions, language targets and goals that we all focus on. Songs, chants. The songs and chants have been absolutely fabulous. I can't wait for you to see more of the videos. The children are just learning so much through there. So we're really finding some great progress, and Lisa's going to come and share some of that. The kids are doing a great job reading as well.
Thank you. So just last week, I was talking with Connie. She said, you have to come into my first grade class. My students are reading in English. She said, I want another person's opinion, because maybe it's just me and I'm biased because I'm their teacher, but I want you to just come in and see. They cannot get enough of their English books. So I said, sure, I'd love to. I'll BAST, you know, a high, medium, and low, and just let's see where they're at. So I BAST a high, medium, low. They went beyond both of our expectations and where they were in reading. And I said, Connie, give me your whole class list. I'm BASTing all of them. I've got to see your whole list. I can't, and I now, of course, I want to do the whole grade level, but I didn't have time. So I took all of her students, I BASTed them in English, and these are the results that we saw. Of her 22, 8 are reading at a kinder level, 36% of her class, but 14 are reading at a first grade level in English. That's 64% of her class. 6 EL students and 8 EO students. And again, taking into mind that these students are receiving 35 minutes of English instruction a day. But in that 35 minutes, every single minute counts. Like Tara said, it is so intentional, it is so tied to the content that they're already learning in Spanish, that when I was reading with these students, they have the foundation literacy skills from Spanish, and they're just transferring them into English. It is unbelievable. I was so excited. I mean, literally went home to my husband, and I was like, you have to see this. This is amazing. And Connie and I were just talking before the meeting that, you know, we thought maybe down the road more we would see this, but seeing this foundation that they have in Spanish and how they're just transferring it to English is amazing. So the next slide shows some videos of what the ELD time looks like in action. So you can see the chants and the reading and what it all looks like.
Well, I do this in Spanish, and it helps me do it in English also.
Observing nature can be a blast. Observing nature can be a blast.
English, you get more better and better reading English. Mm-hmm. And more and more reading, it gets like fantastic.
Fantastic.
Uh-huh.
That's a great word.
Wow. The we have one more slide to share with you. I cannot say enough how proud I am of the work that has gone on. It's really been amazing to look at curriculum and say we can't purchase a kit and use it, which would be the easy route, because it's not good enough. It doesn't fit. And then to say, okay, we're just going to go and do this ourselves, it's amazing. I mean, when they get together for a planning day, you can hear them inventing chants down the hall. The whole office is filled with teachers trying to figure out the rhythm and the words that will go with it, and it's just amazing to see it happen in the classroom and watch the progress of the kids. This work is top-notch, and it's because of a dedicated staff and the level of collaboration that we have going on. We're really proud of the work. And we'll wrap it up with a couple parent comments.
Me gusta leer porque es muy fácil para mí. Y como yo, how I teach my parents how to hablar en español, yo hablo con ellos y... Sometimes I like talk to them and say what it means, porque no hablar mucho, so eso es todo.
Hi, my name is Tomitila. I am a mother of a kindergarten student here at Pacheco. And I also volunteer about 12 hours a week. I see a lot of what's happening in class. I really like this school and program because my daughter has really improved her Spanish, mainly through reading in the classroom and reading at home. I have seen in the classroom that the children read a lot. In partners and on their own, both in Spanish and English, and they use their peers to help them out to, like, how do you say that? Figure out words that they don't know.
Hi, my name is Nicole Hakobian, and I have two children here at Pacheco, a fourth grader and a first grader, and my first grader is in the inaugural class of the 90-10 program. And although my fourth grader has done really well with the Spanish language, I see a drastic difference in the two approaches. My first grader is now surpassed my fourth grader in terms of his reading abilities, his comprehension, and his accent is exceptional. Another thing that I have seen in the difference between the two programs is the comfort level of my first grader within the Spanish language. He doesn't have the anxiety that I saw in my fourth grader, especially at the younger ages, with kind of not being sure if he would understand his classroom that day and hesitating about his own knowledge about the subject matter. The other thing that I noticed last year in particular with my first grader who was in kindergarten was the stronger integration among the Spanish-speaking and non-Spanish-speaking children, particularly at playtime on the playground. So it seemed to create a greater cohesiveness among the children that then carried over into the classroom as well. My fourth grader is now using my first grader as a resource when he is unsure of some of his Spanish homework and going to him and asking him. So that as well illustrates the significance of the 90-10 program in terms of the earlier comprehension and the reading level again, and the accent is excellent.
Okay. Any questions?
Mr. Mayfield, your teachers and you yourself are to be commended. You are so dedicated and so enthusiastic and so creative. Who would have known that this could have been accomplished in such a short period of time? Right. And to create all of your own resources on your own time, it's extraordinary. Can't thank you enough. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Mr. Buckman.
I second everything that Catherine said, but one of the most exciting things for me is that you looked at what you needed to get this done, and you couldn't. My understanding is you went nationwide looking for stuff. Is that
high and low. Yeah.
High and low, and then instead we came back, and your staff was able to create it. So I'm just blown away. Thank you.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I just want to use this opportunity to commend Rick and your staff for the incredible DLAC meeting. It was so important. And the support from staff and teachers was amazing, and I think it did an incredible service for the Spanish-speaking community particularly, but I think for all of us. So I want to thank you and your staff for that.
Thank you. I agree.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. Mr. Mayfield, congratulations along with, my fellow board members. We're very impressed with what you've done. My question is, the materials that were unavailable and that had to be created by your staff, when was that work done?
Well, we've done some release time. We've done some extra paid time in summer, weekend time, late evening time. But release time, I've given them sub-days where they release at the grade level, and then Lisa leads the planning, and then the team works together to make all that happen. And it goes late into the evening, I can tell you.
So teachers are putting aside their own families and their lives away from the school in order to be able to accomplish so much for students. It's really astounding. The level of dedication is evident and very much appreciated.
Thank you.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Yes, I want to commend the teachers and certainly the principal of the school for their efforts in this. It's a little surprising to me that you can't find these materials, and I'm not questioning anything here. It's just that 1974 is when I started teaching in a bilingual bicultural program, albeit it was at the secondary level, high school level. And finding materials is actually, we had to go to find out what was being sold in Mexico for part of our curriculum. And so here we are, 43 years later, and people are still not able to find the things that they need. But I really do appreciate the way that you've woven the whole curriculum together. I think that's really outstanding. And one final comment, raising a reader, is that being utilized at all at the pre-K?
We have it at preschool, and we have a similar program in first grade.
That's a wonderful program,
and
I'm glad you guys can do that. Allows the children to bring books home. And my grandson and I are reading a book called Somos Primos. And so, he reads to me the English. He wants me to read him the Spanish, but he can also read a few words in Spanish, and even though he's not in Pacheco. So it's a great program.
Thank you.
There are
materials available. I don't want to give you the impression there's nothing out there. But it never fits exactly the teaching point that you want to make. And a lot of times publishers kind of hurry to fit in Common Core into their materials and get it published. And they don't do necessarily a high-quality job. And so what we determined was we could do this better by creating the materials and that match exactly what we're doing. So,
Mr. Hunker.
So 2 years ago when you started this program, I was talking to a friend of mine who is a Cal Poly professor and has two children at your school. And the comment, I was talking to her about this 90-10 program, and the comment she said was, well, let's see if it works. I want to see the data, right? And it looks like it's working. And it makes sense in terms of language development. So I think you guys are doing a great job. And on behalf of the I can't speak for the board, on behalf of myself, being able to teach kids in a way that absolutely fits language development theory is just wonderful, and I congratulate you for that.
Yeah, thank you. When I shared anecdotally, some of the information about how what you learn in Spanish transfers to English, And then we shared some of the first grade data with a parent recently. She said, yeah, I know that you said that in the initial presentation, but I didn't really believe you. She said, but now it's amazing to see what's happening. Yeah.
Mrs. Sheffer.
So as these materials are developed, I'm assuming they will be used year after year and refined, but so the wheel will not need to be completely reinvented again.
Right.
And I'm sure your fellow teachers appreciate that. But I just wanted to add on to what my colleagues have said in terms of your ability to get together with a common mission and collaborate around children and their learning. Is what a better place this world would be if we all had that attitude to come together around our future that way. So thank you so much for this work.
Thank you.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this item? Seeing no. Okay. Mrs. Neuhauser?
My name is Judy Neuhauser from Los Osos. I taught at the Pacheco program in sixth grade for 5 years when I first got back from Costa Rica. And I got to say, these first graders are talking better than my sixth graders. My Anglo sixth graders spoke in Spanish. At the sixth grade level, they're conjugating their verbs. They're putting things together in the proper order. I'm really impressed. So nice job. What took you so long?
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much for your time.
Very much appreciate your work. Thank you, ladies. We're moving on to item number 9.02, which is the California's new accountability system school dashboard. This will be presented by Ms. Shields. Oh, there you are.
Good evening. I have no videos, I have no children, but I've got some really important information to share with you tonight. Did read that. So I'm here to provide you an overview of the new accountability system in California School Dashboard. As you recall, I first shared an introductory webcast back in January, and then last week we shared a dashboard user's guide to help you digest this very complex and evolving system. With the launching of the dashboard, or at least what they're calling the pilot dashboard, tentatively scheduled for next week, it seemed like the right time to share a more comprehensive report with some of the most current information from the State Department, as well as a preview of some of our San Luis Coastal performance data. There we go. So the new accountability system replaces the former Academic Performance Index, or API, which was based solely on testing results, as well as the federal requirement of adequate yearly progress, or AYP. As we transition to a new system of accountability, the public will soon be able to see multiple measures to determine a more complete picture of what contributes to a positive school experience for students. This new system reflects a clear expectation that all districts and schools can and should improve, and emphasizes equity by focusing on student group performances. What I like about the new system is that the dashboard represents a relative growth model. It's not just did the students make it or not. It's about measuring growth, not only of all students, but for each of our student groups. The growth model, I think, complements the kind of work we've been doing in our district with our Danielson instructional model, with our standards-based report card, and our common assessments. It's not just about that final score. It's about evidence, progress, and growth. What I don't like about the new system is that while some of the data will be very current, some of the data will be 1 or even 2 years old by the time it goes up on the dashboard, which means it's going to be important to look closely when examining data from the dashboard and to not jump to quick conclusions without looking under the surface to understand what the data means. So the new system relies on a coherent set of metrics and rubrics or indicators that are aligned to the eight state priorities of the Local Control Accountability Plan, or LCAP. The system is based on looking at a district's current status as well as growth on each of those eight priorities. In addition, the required federal metrics that are part of the Every Student Succeeds Act will now come directly from our state indicators, making it much more coherent system for ongoing improvement. In English, what that means is we used to have federal requirements and state requirements. They now become the same. So when we're talking about a data and assessment point, it will meet both the requirements of as compared to when we used to have the AMAOs over here and state assessments over here. Now it's all going to be the same, which is a big improvement. As a reminder, here are those eight state priorities selected by the CDE for measuring success in our district and schools. These eight priorities are a required component of the LCAP plans. Although they've been in our LCAP since the beginning, the state has really evolved in defining what each of those priorities means and how they'll be measured. As you can see, for each of the eight state priorities, there is either a state or a local indicator to measure progress. In the case of Priority 6, there are actually, you could do your little pointer on that one, Kim. Kim's going to be my pointer tonight. There are actually both state and local indicators. Tonight we're going to take a closer look at just the state indicators, but I want to warn you before I show the next slide. It's a bit overwhelming, but it makes the point that this is a work in progress. So California's emerging accountability system won't be fully in place until the 2019-20 school year. This timeline is just a guide, and we've been told it's subject to change, but it does help to provide a sense of other components coming into play and approximate timelines for their inclusion in the system. The areas highlighted in gold clarify which year the indicator will be fully operational within the accountability system. I think it's interesting to note when you look at the chronic absenteeism indicator, they're going to use attendance data gathered from this school year as a baseline, but not to be fully operational until the 1920 school year. For San Luis Coastal, that's really not a big deal because we already closely monitor attendance at both the district and school level. It is going to be critical, and we're going to have to be creative to figure out how we're going to provide leadership and support to our schools in preparing for each of these transitions with a reduced staff and support system in place at the district office. It's a complex and evolving system, and our job will be to make it understandable and useful for our schools, parents, and community. I think this is an interesting leadership challenge. So as I mentioned, the six state-level indicators align with one or more of the eight LCAP priorities. Each indicator has a specific set of metrics. Some indicators will be measured for all students, while others will measure growth with specific grade levels or populations. Again, the reality is that some of the data will not be most current, such as suspension, English learner, and graduation rates. And some of the data will be very current, such as our CASP data. I want the board to know that we're working with staff both in instructional services as well as in student support services to include data sets with our local and more current district assessments to better inform our academic and intervention decisions in real time. So I'm going to walk you through how the California model works and then show you some real examples from San Luis Coastal. A major change, if you watched my webcasts, in the new accountability system is how we will calculate performance. The California model uses percentile cut scores for status and change to make an overall determination for each of the indicators. Status is based on the most current year's performance that they're sharing. Change is the difference between performance from the prior year and the most current year. The combination of a district's status and change determine performance, which are represented by a color: red, orange, yellow, green, blue. And the goal is to get towards blue. This will help us by knowing where we're at and where we're performing. It will help us to pinpoint where we are and begin that process of planning for next steps of improvement. So again, status was determined using the most current year's performance, but in some cases, that status is based on 2014-15 data or even 2013-14 data. In fact, I shared with you a little cheat sheet that we'll refer to later that shows you what's the most current data that will be up on our data dashboard. There are five possible status levels or cut points: very high, medium, low, or very low. Change is the difference between performance from the most current year and the prior year, or the difference between the current year and a multi-year prior average. Okay. The change levels include increased significantly, increased, maintained, declined, or declined significantly. So when you put all that together, you end up with this. We now have a 25, we call this the 5x5 chart, or 5x5 report, that shows you 25 possible results. In this growth model, the goal is to move up and move to the right. Make sense? Walt, all right, awesome. Generally, the higher your percentages and the more significant your growth, the better your results. The exception would be suspension, where the goal is to have the percentages decline to show growth. Yellow is interesting, as you can see, running right down the middle there. Yellow can be a concern, and it can also be a positive. You could be in the yellow performance area and have increased in your performance from the previous year, but still be in the medium or even low levels. You could also be in the yellow, but have shown a decline from the year before. So let's take a look at one of the specific state levels. And what I'm showing you now is the 5x5 chart for graduation. As you can see, the column on the left, so that far left-hand column, shows you the current status or graduation rate for a school or district. The percentages shown or cut scores determine the status. The top row across shows the possible change to the graduation rate over 1 year's time. So as an example, I need everybody to get their thinking caps on here. If a school or district has a graduation rate, a most current graduation rate of 92%, that would be considered what status?
High.
Very good. If that graduation rate had been at a 95% the previous year, that would be a what percent decline?
No, decline.
That is correct. That would be a 3% decline from the previous year. And according to the graduation rate indicator, that school or district would be in what zone?
Yellow.
That right there. Kim's kind of scaffolding this for us. They would be in the yellow zone of performance for this year's LCAP. So I want to give you one more example just to make a little point here. So if a school or district had a graduation rate at 89%, their most current graduation at 89%, it would be considered
medium
status. If the year before the graduation rate had been at 84%, that would be an increase of 5%, which is considered significant. So according to the graduation indicator, that school or district would be in which zone?
Green
zone. Very good. Somebody sit close there. For this year's LCAP, even though their current status is lower than the first example I gave you. Okay? You're doing great, Mr. Miller. So what's important in all of this is the continuous improvement work that is done with the information.
Could you explain this to the Secretary of Education?
By using an ongoing data cycle, we'll be able to look for trends or areas of concern, as well as areas of success from the prior school year, to analyze and develop our strategies and actions for the upcoming school year. The model's designed to support all students in continuous growth and progress. So let's go back for just a minute to those six state-level indicators. We're going to look at some of the actual snapshots from our dashboard at San Luis Coastal. And we're going to begin by looking at mathematics. This is an area that we have spent a lot of time and resources on over the past 6 years. So this is what it actually looks like. Not to worry if you can't read all the small pieces. The 5x5 report shows you the results for our district for 3rd through 8th grade, as well as each of our elementary and middle schools. Our 11th grade is not included in this because their results are part of the college career indicator, so those show up in a separate place. And as you can see, San Luis Coastal's performance in math is at the highest level, or blue. All of our elementary and middle schools also scored at the green or blue level. This is a direct reflection of your commitment and focus when you adopted the 10 district initiatives, as well as the tremendous amount of work our teachers and principals have done over the past 6 years to dramatically change the way we teach and the way students learn math.
So, Mrs. Shields?
Is this all students?
This is all students. But let's dig a little deeper on that. I'm just in the spirit of giving you an example. Now I'm going to show you a few schools, and then I'm going to show you a few of our student groups. So if we look at, but I want to go back. Mrs. Holmes, can you take me back? Because before we go any further, it's really important, and with the CASP scores for both math and ELA, that you understand how those cut scores were developed on the far left-hand side. So what we know about the CASP or SBAC is that a student can score a 1, 2, 3, or 4. And the goal is for our students to score a level 3, which means standard met. So if we start by understanding that, the way the state developed the cut scores is the distance from 3. And it's based on scaled scores, and it's very mathematical. But they figured out what they thought would be an appropriate distance from the average percentage of students scoring at that level 3. So if you see the very low down at the bottom, which would be down close to that red, that would be the average of the district or school scores that were more than 95 points below a level 3. If you look at the very high status, that means the average score was 35 points or more above a level 3.
Okay.
With that understanding, let's dive a little bit deeper into our mathematics performance. So in this chart, we're able to see, to look closely at status and change from the 2015 to the 2016 CASP results for the district and three of our schools. To understand this table, we're going to need to read across the top. So after you see the name of the school, or it starts with the district, that next column shows you the performance color, followed by the status and the change color. So we're going across there. Then you see the current status, which is the distance from level 3. And that's followed by the change. And this is the important one, this column that's titled change at the top. This is the relative progress, or what happened between 2015 and 2016. So this tells you whether it went up or whether it went down. The next two columns tell you the number of students who took the assessment for each of the years, and the final column gives you the prior status. So for San Luis Coastal, our average score is 18.5 points above a level 3, which is considered a high status. Okay. When you compare that to 2015, our average score was 3 points below a level 3 that first year we took it. So we increased significantly by an average of 21.5 scale score points.
Baywood.
Everybody nodding? All right. You can also see how Baywood, Hawthorne, and Loams increased significantly and are now in the high status level. In fact, when you look at the change column, you're able to see the actual change in average scale scores made in just 1 year. All three schools making significant gains. Our next step would be to look at the LCAP identified students groups to determine areas of growth and progress. So let's do that. So on this chart, you can see status and change for specific student groups. And for example, our English learners increased significantly, 25.3 scale score points in math on the SBAC, but are still in the low status area. And this gave them a performance indicator of yellow. The same is true for our socioeconomically disadvantaged student group. And then you can see our students with disabilities increased from the previous year, but with a less significant rate. Okay. You can dive into this data by school, by group, by school, in many, many, many ways. So let's take a look at our English language arts performance for our third through eighth graders on the SBAC as shown on the dashboard. So now it's going to start to look familiar. I'll tell you that the cut scores represented on the left for English language arts are a little bit different. They're actually a little bit higher because the state noticed that in general districts were performing higher on English language arts than they were in mathematics. As you can see here, our district is currently at the green performance level, representing high level of achievement and increased performance from the year before. You can also see the majority of our schools are in the green or blue performance levels. So let's take a look at a few schools' results. In this table, you see the district, C.L. Smith, Monarch Grove, and Laguna. If you look closely at C.L. Smith, you will notice a positive change of 13.7 points. This means that they have increased student achievement, showing relative growth, but they're still in the low level, earning the yellow performance indicator. Yellow's that bit trickiness, kind of a caution flag, because the reality, though, is that we want C.L. Smith to keep doing what they're doing, demonstrating growth in overall student performance from the prior year. If you look more closely at Monarch Grove, they have an orange indicator, even though their academic performance is at the medium level. This is because of the change, meaning they decreased a small amount, 2.8 points from the previous year. And again, both factors are equally rated, status and change. So their current status is actually 4.1 points above a level 3, but for Monarch Grove, they're going to want to continue to dive into the data, determine factors hindering growth in 2016. It's interesting to note that Monarch's student group is pretty small, and their first-year performance on the SBAC was pretty strong at 6.9 points above a level 3. Now, if we look at specific student groups, oh, I forgot Laguna, and yes.
The cut scores that you talk about mm-hmm. on the level side, will they fluctuate as the years go on and as they renorm the assessments, or are they going to be static?
Yes, they will they will change, but I did read something recently, but what I'm reading is evolving, that says they're thinking that they'll stay the same 5 to 7 years, but they could change next year.
Thank you.
And back to, if we could go back one slide, Kim, I didn't mention Laguna Middle School. You can see a high level of performance that showed an 8.1 point increase from the prior year. So looking at specific student groups, status and change in English language arts, you can see that all our major student groups of English learners, socioeconomically disadvantaged, and students with disabilities increased ELA performance, but they're still in that low status level. That puts them in a yellow indicator. When you look at the far right column, you're able to see the actual change from the year before. It was most significant for our students with disabilities with a 19.6 average scale score increase. So I want to show you one more example with our suspension rate indicator. And let me start by saying these performance levels represent the difference between 2013 school year and 2013-14 versus 2014-15. So here you can see that San Luis Coastal is in the green performance level. We have more of a scattering of schools across the various performance levels here, including blue, green, yellow, and even one at red. So we need to look a little more closely at that. On this chart, you can see that our district actually declined in the number of suspensions from 2013-14 to 14-15. If you look at Del Mar, you can see the green performance indicator came from maintaining low levels of suspension for both years. For Los Osos Middle School, the yellow performance indicator came from maintaining a medium suspension level. And for SLO High School, the red performance level came from a very high suspension status that had actually increased from 2013-14 to 14-15. This is where it becomes very important to understand the story underneath the data. For SLO High School, these increased suspensions were the result of a former progressive discipline policy the school was using that resulted in those increased suspensions. Since that time, SLO High School has implemented a program for alternative means of correction, integrating social, emotional, and goal-setting curriculum to address students' infractions. Subsequently, this has resulted in a significant decrease in suspensions for the 15-16 school year. Specifically, we had 144 suspensions in 13-14, that went up to 153 in 14-15, that dropped to 127 in 15-16, and as of the first half of the year 16-17, they recorded 26 suspensions. Okay. If we look at specific LCAP groups, again, you see an area of concern for our students with disabilities. It's again worth sharing that with the implementation of restorative justice programs at our middle schools, the suspension rate for our students with disabilities dropped in 2015-16 from 86 to 62. Suspension data has been something that we have been paying close attention to as a district and at our school sites. I would anticipate even higher performance levels next year. So I want to show you one more balcony view of San Luis Coastal that will be in our data dashboard. It's the first set of results, and as you can see, it shows our district performing at the blue or highest level for mathematics and graduation rate. Our English language arts and suspension indicators are at the green level, and the English learner progress shows us at the medium level and maintaining our progress. We expect the college career indicator to be up on the dashboard in its first phase, but it's not been available for us to preview. California Department of Ed has announced that we tentatively will launch the pilot of the school dashboard next week, and we've been very busy making sure our principals, teachers, and soon our community will have access and support for interpreting the dashboard. And as we move forward in our new accountability system, the dashboard will allow us to take a deeper look at each of the state priorities and review the progress of not only our district, but each school and each LCAP student group. And we'll be analyzing our performance based on status and change from the previous year or previous years. This will increase San Luis Coastal's understanding of our progress so we can better target and plan for future improvement. And I look forward to sharing additional information with you as it becomes available. Any questions?
Yes, board questions, starting with Mrs. Sheffer.
So, Amy, my head is exploding here. I want to make sure or see if I understand something correctly. At the very beginning, you talked about how the state dashboard, our information will be approximately 2 years old?
Some of our information.
Okay.
So specifically, our state test results will be the most current for English language arts and math. Our suspension rates will be a year old. Our graduation rates will be a year old. They'll be based on the change between 13-14 and 14-15. Our English learner indicator will represent 2012-13 compared to 13-14. So that actually will be 2 years old, what's up on there.
And then at some point, will it all catch up?
I don't know.
Okay, so otherwise it could just be these stats, because that seems like it's not very good information if some of it's current, some of it's 2 years old. So then my question is, for our district, for San Luis Coastal District, is there a way to, or will we have information that in every category is current?
Let me think about that for a minute. One of the
One of the areas that wasn't up tonight was the attendance. And I will tell you, our attendance that we share out with our sites and with our board as well is most current. And it's even down to the by trimester or by semester, because we have to look at it, you know, every year during the year. Right. Our suspension rate, I gave you an example tonight of we look at that very current, up to date. So it's nice and it shows a trend, but we were already looking at that because that was a concern for us. Mm-hmm. So what I tried to say, and maybe I didn't say it clearly, is that this is some of the data is going to be very helpful for us, but some of it is just going to be a reminder that we need to pull together our sources of data, our local data, and our more current data available to us, because that's really going to inform our decisions.
Right. So that's kind of the bottom line of my question, which it's my understanding we have current data now from which we, as the board, work. So we'll continue to have our own resources to look at current data in all categories.
As best as our departments can produce for you.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, which is wonderful now. So it's just a matter, the gap in the timing comes from we submit that to the state and then whenever they put it up. Right. Or gather it. So
it's what's gathered in what's called CalPADS.
Okay, so our information available to us has been current, will remain current.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Unger.
I have two questions for you, Amy. Can you talk to me a little bit about more specifically how we're informing the staff and what our plans are for informing the community about this new system?
Absolutely. Could you go to the second to the last slide? Thank you. So I provided workshops to both our secondary administration and our elementary administration, I believe it was last month, where they got to practice the status and change and look at some of our suspension data, graduation date, to learn how it was going to work. I've provided them with some message points that they're going to be sending out in their newsletters. I've updated my blog that went out to all of our school sites and therefore then to all of our teachers yesterday. We have a letter for parents that actually the CDE developed that we've had translated and is ready to click the button to send to our parents. We don't want to get ahead of the launching because that parent letter has a live link that will allow parents to get right to the data dashboard. So we've got a whole system of communication that's started, that's ongoing, and will continue even after. I imagine, I don't want to speak for our principals, but I imagine this topic will become of interest as a future topic for a breakfast or coffee with the principal as well, as our parents get into and aren't part of this, unless they see my webcast, and then that might take care of it for them.
And how do you see this data further informing instruction?
I think some of it is going to help us. And in fact, for me, in looking at it, and I've now spent a number of hours trying to study it and understand it, what I like about it is really the ELA and the math performance data. I think that's helpful, and it's helpful to be able to look at it from the growth model. Again, what I didn't say that's concerning about it, it doesn't give you cohort data.
Right.
And the work that we do with cohort data and looking at actual student achievement and student concerns is more critical. I'm sure you read the editorial this morning in the paper that was pretty critical of the dashboard system and its limitations. But with that said, it's called a pilot, and they're saying the official launch will be in fall. So we can be hopeful that with feedback and with need that it will get better, but I'm not sure. I can't speak for them.
Are you referring to the LA Times editorial?
No, I'm. Well, yes, it is. That was in the Tribune this morning.
Right. So I think the point of the LA Times editorial was not so much. It was concern about the system, but it was concerned more about specific data being more approachable to parents rather than the data itself. I'm not sure that they had problems with the specific data and the specific priorities, but it was how they were presented, specifically the achievement data, I believe. My last question is, when we look at, well, actually, we will eventually be able to slice it down to specific subgroups.
The goal for 2019-20 is that you'll be able to slice it down to an individual student, that you'll be able to pull up a report on a student, see their colors,
right,
blue, red, yellow, green, see right where that student's at.
And we'll have their status, for example, English language learner, SED, something like that.
Absolutely.
And then finally, when we look at suspension data, are we able to drill down into the types of suspensions? So in other words, I know we don't do willful defiance anymore, but are we able to look at what specific ED code violation is the student accused of?
Well, that would be something that is not under my purview and not something that I'm responsible for, but absolutely, and the school sites have that data, and I think under the guidance, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but of the work with Chris Deller that has spent with those secondary principals and their sites, they very much have that data.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Buckman?
Thank you very much. So I don't know how you did this presentation, but thank you. It's kind of confusing for me, and I'm colors or actually I'm not sure what are we going to do with, you know, for people that are colorblind. But sorry.
Actually, I have an answer for that, Mr. Buckley.
Do you? Okay, well, I don't.
The little round circles.
Right.
They coordinate with the color. So a blue is fully filled, and an orange has just one little piece of the pie.
Thanks.
Or the red has one piece of the pie.
That
truly is for people that are colorblind.
And I hope that works, but I need no more complication than what I've seen. I'm sorry that this has become so complicated. So the question that Chris, just a follow-up and question that Chris asked, you've had a chance to share it with staff.
With
principals. And what was their reaction to this?
I first of all think they were appreciative to learn about it ahead of time so they could digest it a little bit. I think, and I don't want to speak for principals, but I'm going to try to, I think we're all thankful that we're moving past the API-AYP system. Because the AYP was about falling in a ditch that you could never get out of.
Right.
Because no district was ever going to not get out of program improvement.
Right.
With this, it's about where are you now, what have you done since last year, and what are you doing to get to the next place up.
Great.
That's a better system.
Okay. And then just to talk a little more about the LA Times editorial today, there was some talk about this, just to follow up on Chris again, this dashboard, they said it's too difficult. Mm-hmm. And I find it interesting that there's a group that's challenging that's called Parent Revolution, mm-hmm. which is a little scary. And they proposed a different system that would just be two groupings of the data. One other note. Missing it here. But I was the one that came when you came to us and said, we're going to be doing a different report card. And I said, no, it's never going to fly. Parents aren't going to like it. And I was probably 110% wrong. And I'm worried about parents' reception to this and the community's reception. So I'll go out on a limb and say I don't think they're going to like it. But hopefully I'll be wrong again. Thank you.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. You're right. It is complex and kind of hard to understand. I feel like this is a first pass for me at trying to understand it. And I'll be the kid in the class that you just think, oh, my God, she wasn't there at all. If we go to any one of Mrs. Holmes, any one of the not that one. How about that one?
The 5x5 reports?
Any of the 5x5, 5x5 reports. I got lost at the beginning, as I did in algebra, when no one explained to me why that X could be anything. And so I spent a long time trying to figure out why X and not Y at that time. Everything I look at on that appears to add up to 6. Why is it called the 5x5?
Where the colors are, there's only 5 possible colors. So there's, see the yellow up at the top?
So
yellow, green, blue.
Blocks.
Yeah. I'm only counting the color blocks. And that little cheat sheet that I shared with you might be an easier way for you to see that. Did they get that paper? That just shows you a color block.
I would have gone home tonight and been looking at these and going,
I'm saying, Amy can't count.
I see 6. I see 6. Okay, thank you.
Of course.
That's very good. And Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, my first reaction to the LA Times article was we had reduced the school program to, like you say, AYP, API, what are the test scores and only the test scores. And as somebody says, this is complex. It's a complex business that we're in. Mm-hmm. And this may be a little, for me, and maybe I'm the obtuse one, but it's a little hard for me to grasp. If I had any suggestion, was that, that the state would include some summaries, or that when we get our dashboard, we can, and I'm an English major, so I like the written word, I like things kind of summarized. But the point being is, I like the 8 indicators or the 8 things that they're looking at. I think it's very hard to quantify some things, but we can certainly do what they have done with graduation rates and scores and how many students are getting suspended and so forth. So I think that's important too. But again, it doesn't really cover all the complexity of things. It is a little hard for me to understand, and I'm going to have to do my homework on this a bit, but I do appreciate your presentation. Thank you.
Mr. Unker, and then Mr. Muller.
So just kind of an FYI, there are groups that want to make it kind of go back to the old way. Specifically, there are civil rights groups that believe that this doesn't tell the story of student achievement and that it underplays the importance of the SBAC scores. And I think the State Board of Education has fought back on that. The CDE has fought back on that. Really, as Mr. Quisenberry says, it's a much more complicated story. And I think, from my perspective, this helps us get to that place where we can talk about the various components and complexities of schooling and education. Just to answer Mr. Buckman's question, I think Parent Revolution is a group of primarily, I believe, down in Los Angeles that holds schools accountable. However, they encourage charter school takeovers, and so I think it is a group to be concerned about, because I have some concerns about takeovers of charter schools when they're the home school of a specific attendance boundary. But sure. that is one of the things that they're well known for.
Mr. Millar.
Amy, on slide 11, graduation rate indicator priority 5, where did the gray come from? And what does it mean?
Where did what come from?
The gray. And they even told us it was gray.
Which?
It's
11.
Up
there.
Here we go.
Mr. Millar, I cannot answer that question, and I will be doing some research on that and get back to you.
Okay.
Yeah. My guess is that, but I don't want to get ahead of myself. But
okay.
Very low. Yeah.
The Friday focus will be fine.
Mr. Pinkerton, could you put on your mic and say that again?
It's impossible to reach that, because you can't decline by 5% and still be at 95%.
That makes sense. Thank you.
So gray signifies mathematical possibility. Oh. No, that's not.
Yes.
Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, and I just I want to remind everybody, and you'll see part of the problem that's facing Amy and the results being from 2013 and 2000, 14, 15. So on the CDE website, if you go through, there's on the homepage, there's a box that says data, and if you click on data, it takes you to a location called Data Quest. You can put in the school district, and there's most of these 8 topics are right there. And so you can actually drill down fairly easily to the suspensions and why, and also the expulsions and the number that our district, and you can look at other districts. So it's there now. It's just a little harder, and this will make it easier.
Sure. And is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Mrs. Neuhauser?
Thank you. That was a very illuminating presentation. How does this interface with, I guess the question I have is, how does it interface with what we're looking at already? So if I want to see what's going on in the schools, I go to the SBAC state website, the CCASP website, or I can go to the school accountability report card that the district puts on its website for each school. And so is this going to replace it, or is it in addition to it? And so that was my only question. And the other comment I wanted to make is I want to really thank you for having the presentation, having the questions and the answers to the questions first, and then letting public speak. I really appreciate that. I think that's a great modification of the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Neuhauser.
So Dr. Prater, one of the things that we agreed on is that we would acknowledge questions that the public ask. And the question that I wrote down was, how does this new system interface with the system that we currently have? Is that what you heard?
That is what I heard.
Okay, thank you. And then what will be the next steps on that?
Well, I could discuss this with Mrs. Neuhauser after the meeting, if I could.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mrs. Shields, I totally see your webcast going viral. It's going to be very popular after tonight.
What you're known for.
Okay, so we're on to item number 9.03, and Mr. Pinkerton.
So yes, this is actually second reading of a new board policy, debt issuance, and basically we have to have this in place so that we can go out for our next bond sale potentially, new California law. So Kim, if you actually go to the other policy. So one was a kind of a red line, the CSBA red line in terms of what Jones Hall and John Eisen put together. So three questions came out of the last board meeting. So I wanted to address those, and I addressed them in Friday notes, but I'll bring those up. So the first one was on this first page, if you go down to this second paragraph right there, it says the district shall not enter into indebtedness or liability. And so it talks about unless two-thirds of the voters approve the obligation. And so the question came from the board, well, what about the 55%? And so Jones Hall basically said, well, if you keep reading, or one of the exceptions specified in law applies. So the 55% passage of a bond is basically that second portion of that sentence. So that's okay, yep, in terms of coverage, all right? So Ms. Holmes, if you keep going down all the way, I think it was K. So at the top it has a B, so 3470B, so if you go all the way down to K. Yeah.
It's a little confusing as we always look at these policies. I want to clarify that CSBA has chosen this method. The letters A, B, C that you see next to the policy numbers are page numbers, not sub-policy sets.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
So what page are we on?
K.
No, we can't get K.
Wait, go back up. Go back up. Sorry, it wasn't K. Hang on.
It wasn't K.
No, it's D.
Sorry.
There it is, D.
Okay. Got it.
I apologize. So the first one was 4. And the question was about the QZAB. So if you go down a little bit, QZAB, should we have this language, you know, continue in the policy? Do they do QZAB anymore? So according to Mr. Isom, as well as Jones, that is a potential in the future, that funding could come back and could be something that the board wants to look at. So he recommended leaving that language in the board policy.
Okay.
And then the last one, if you go down a little bit, Ms. Holmes, Right there. So the last paragraph. And so there's, when considering a debt issuance, the board and superintendent or designee may evaluate both the short-term and long-term implications of the debt issuance and additional operating costs. So Mr. Eisen, in the CSBA board policy, says shall do those things. Mr. Eisen, in his response back to me with talking to Jones Hall, he recommended may, in that he just doesn't want the district to have to go through things necessarily that we could if the district chose to, if the board chose to do those things, to have it, but that you don't have to do it. Personally, when I read through that paragraph, those are things we're probably going to do anyways if we're going to issue debt. So whether it says may or shall is completely up to the board. So I have no problem with it, either one.
Okay. Mr. Millar.
Well, I mean, what it describes is basic due diligence before we undertake.
Agreed.
So to make it optional, I mean, it should be shall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so I have no problem leaving.
Because it would be misfeasance to not undertake that process before we made a decision. And when I say we, I mean the collective, we, the administration and the board. But
so I'm good with shall.
And Mr. Isom is a bond advisor, not an attorney.
No. Okay. But we also had Jones Hall go through the policy as well.
All right.
And Jones Hall.
Who was our bond counsel.
Okay.
Do we have any more?
Do we want to change it?
Is there any more questions from the board about this?
Why don't we make that could I make a suggestion that we would make that a motion when we get to the motion piece? And
Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I was going to make a motion.
Why don't we go to the public
first? Yes, we're first going to take this to the public. Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this item? Seeing no one. Come back to the board, Mr. Buckman.
So I appreciate the time that you spent on this, Ryan, and the questions that you answered for me. I'd like to make a motion to approve board policy 3470.
With the change.
I'm sorry, as you presented it.
With shall instead
I'm
of
sorry.
May.
Yes, and shall was very important to me.
Okay.
Yeah, all of those corrections you made to my motion, I would like to include in my motion. Thanks.
Is there a second?
Yeah, I'll second.
Mr. Quisenberry, second. Is there any further discussion among the board? Seeing none, there's a motion by Mr. Buckman and seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes 7-0.
Thank you.
You shall. Thank you. Sit down. Thank you. We're moving on to item number 9.04. The high school graduation discussion, and Mrs. McGrath.
Thank you. This evening I bring forward a first reading of a proposed change to high school graduation requirements it is in response to a new law that does add an exemption for former juvenile court school students. So in this policy, it does suggest the addition of this paragraph. It says a foster youth or homeless student or former juvenile court student who transfers into the district any time after completing his or her second year of high school, that's an important component, shall be required to complete all graduation requirements, but shall be exempt from any additional district-adopted graduation requirements. So when you look at that, there are three ways in which our district requirements are in addition to Ed Code. One of those is English. Ed Code requires 3 years where we require four. Mathematics Ed Code requires two where we require three. And then we also have a technology literacy requirement. I do believe that in addition to it being a new law that we add in the former juvenile court students, I do think this is beneficial to students that may be at a greater risk for not being able to graduate with the additional requirements. This is your first reading, and I am available for any questions.
Mark, Mr.
So I'm just gonna ask, because I feel we're on the edge of possibly making a motion, and since this is the first time that we've seen it, and the first time that the public's seen it, I would like to suggest, unless we need it right now, that we carry this over to the next for a second reading, so that the public has an opportunity to comment on it between now and the next meeting. I don't know if I need to make that as a motion or not. It's just a suggestion at this point.
Anyone else on the board want to comment on that?
No motion.
Idea? Mr. Unger?
I'm sorry, Mark. I have to disagree with you. I think this makes sense, and because it is Ed Code, we'd be including Ed Code in here. I'm not sure why we would feel like we would need to take it for a second reading next time.
Mr. Millar, you had a comment?
I just said I concur with Mr. Unger.
Mr. Buckman?
So I will make a motion to waive the second reading, and I move to approve the changes to board policy 6146.1.
Did we want to go to the public on this? Is there anyone in the public who would like to speak to this? Okay, seeing no one. We have a motion by Mr.
I'll second.
And a second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes 7-0. Thank you, Mrs. Booker.
Did you? Sorry.
We are moving on to item number 9.05, update on emergency resolution related to the fire at San Luis Obispo High School. Mr. Pinkerton.
So this is probably the last time the board's going to see this item on the agenda, but again, we're finishing up some of the temporary portable classrooms right now that teachers are going to move into as a result of the fire at San Luis Obispo High School, and that's almost completely wrapped up, so... Again, this should be the last time that this should be an item for the board.
Mrs. Schiffer.
So because this has already been signed and approved before, this isn't, do we don't, so just this is informational only, is
yes,
that correct?
Yeah,
thank you.
Nothing that we have to approve by the board, but according to our attorney, we needed, as long as we're potentially using that resolution, we had to continue to bring it up to the board.
I understand.
Until we're complete.
Thank you.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. I noticed in donations for this board packet that another couple thousand dollars had been donated for computer robotics loss due to the fire. I wonder if you have any sense, because our insurance company is replacing all everything that was lost, how much money the public has given to support those programs?
Yeah,
any
I don't
feel
have it
for
off
it?
I don't have it off the top of my head right now, but I can find out to share with you, absolutely. You know, they've been really great about going through it. It does take some time to get insurance money. So both the school side has been helping out and getting them whatever they need, as well as these, you know, groups have come forward and really enhancing probably what they had to begin with. In terms of
right,
in the
that
long
was
run,
that was what I was wondering if those
donations.
Monies then would be used
yes.
for enhancements to the program.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Yes, our insurance company will be covering all of those items. The teachers have put lists together. We've met with them, given them all the information.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton.
Oh, Mr. Pinkerton, don't go away.
Mr. Quisenberry has a question.
No, I just you know you said they're about ready. Do you have an ETA when? They can move into those
so
classes.
They might hold me accountable if I tell
Oh, okay. You are. It's going to be kind of on the down.
15th
close.
Is what I heard today.
Oh, okay. A possibility.
Next
15th.
Week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
So temporary portables, putting them together. Unfortunately, the rain has just been unbelievable in terms of trying to button things up, get it dry before you can do things. But they paved the whole front in front of those new temp portables today. So they're going to go in with flooring, carpet, new whiteboards, paint inside. Brand new, beautiful televisions instead of projectors. It's going to be very nice.
Are we going to get an opportunity to look at them?
Absolutely.
Once, okay, great. Thank
that
you.
Might be a nice thing to do at our next study session is walk down.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. We have a rather lengthy action consent list, so if you'll abide with me. Item number 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 10.02, approval of purchase orders and CalCard purchases. 10.03, approval of warrants and payroll. 10.04, approval of furniture.
Excuse me, full 10.03.
03. 10.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests.
Hold, please.
10.05, disposition of surplus property. 10.06, acceptance of donations. I'd like to pull that. And 10.07, approval of foreign exchange organizations. 10.08, employee retention fund. So I'll entertain a motion to approve items number 10.02, 10.05, 10.07, and 10.08.
Okay, I'll move approval of item 10.01, 10.02, 10.05, 10.07, and 10.08.
I'll second that.
Thank you. It's a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
That passes 7-0. And Mr. Millar, you pulled 10.0.
I did indeed. I need to recuse myself as there involves payments to PMSM Architecture, which employs my wife.
Thank you. And Mrs. Roger, 10.04.
Right.
Do you want to take a vote on 03?
Oh, yes, 10.03.
I'll move to approve 10.03.
Mr. Buckman.
I'll second that.
Okay, Mr. Buckman made the motion, and Mr. Unger seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Ms. Roger.
Well, thank you. Under FERS, I usually...
Microphone.
Oh, okay.
Under FERS, I usually can pretty much figure out what the items are that we're purchasing, although I was stymied by large marching quints, and I just wonder if someone could please explain to me what they are for $1,275.
So my quick Google search of quints led me to believe, have you seen the guys that march the drums?
Yes.
And they have the... They have the series of drums that hang over their shoulders, and they drum along. That's what a quint is.
That's what a quint
yes,
is.
Yes, I just found that out.
Okay, well, having learned that, and I appreciate it, I'll move approval of item 10.04.
Thank you. Motion by Mrs. Roger and second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And I asked to pull donations. I did want to comment on the very generous donation by MindBody to the Slo High School Computer Lab and Robotics Program. That's much appreciated. And also, I had to just comment on the Slo Cattle Women who have donated $400 worth of beef for our local lunch menu. So that's awesome that we're going local with our food here.
Well, I'd like to comment that as long as we're calling out donations, my favorite one in this packet is Monarch Grove received $2 from Maddie Pierce, a student who sold oranges from her tree and donated the proceeds.
That is adorable.
So if there are no other comments, I'll move approval of item 10.06.
And we'll second. That's a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you. So we are down to, reports by board members and advanced agendas. Anyone have any advanced agenda items? Okay, we're going to scoot back down to the board reports. Mrs. Roger, did you have a board report?
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Mr. Unger.
So, I'll let you talk about Coastal Resource. But that was great. I went on a board walk with Catherine at Los Osos Middle School, and I mean, I'd say it was a pretty cool time.
That was awesome.
It was really, really fun. We had a really good time. Got to do Read Across America at Hawthorne, and I want to thank Michelle Hendricks for her invitation. I got to read my favorite book, Danny Champion of the World, the two classes. It was great. I want to offer congratulations to Kathy Bonnet on the announcement of her retirement. She's a longtime Baywood resource specialist, and she's going to be spending some time camping and with her grandchildren. And then I won't be here for the next meeting. I will be in Sacramento for the CSBA Legislative Action Day.
Time well spent.
I'm hopeful that we'll, be able to make some inroads on some of the legislative issues. I am supposed to meet with Jordan Cunningham and hopefully Bill Monning. So we'll see.
Yeah,
Mr. Quisenberry.
Great, Kristen. Build those relationships with Jordan Cunningham. I think it's really important. Just a couple of things. The school resource fair, I don't remember that I commented on that, did I? Yet, but the school resource fair that was held last Friday already? At Los Osos Middle School, our school outreach person that's provided by Funds to Link, right? Yeah, so Rocio Hernandez did a wonderful job of getting many, many of the local agencies and providers there, and a huge turnout of folks. So so you think of Cuesta College was there, Cal Poly was there. There were people offering free tax preparation. Any number of other groups you can possibly imagine, they were all there, and it was well attended. I'm not sure. I just hope everybody was motivated or had at least a better motivation than I had, which was the taco truck, you know, which was hugely popular. And excellent tacos, by the way. So that was fun. And then I did want to mention that the Resource Center in Los Osos has been up and running. Thank you to the district for providing the room. They just recently had a meeting for a group that was interested in poverty and homelessness, and it was well attended by over 50 people, including Marilyn Roger from our board. And so they discussed the possibilities of a community dinner and some shelter, a warming center, and possibly some, what do they call it?
Safe parking.
So things are moving in Los Osos, hoping to address things. And, of course, Marilyn provided a lot of great information on the number of students that we have in poverty and the fact that we do have students whose families are homeless. And, you know, we're doing our best to help meet their needs. But it is a growing need. It seems to be a growing need in Los Osos. But anyway, that's that was last night, correct? And it was, well, like I said, it was well attended. I think the centers were making good use of it.
Thank you, Mr. Quisenberry. And Mr. Buckman.
Oh, thanks. So I was out of town. I missed a lot of district events, and I apologize, but they sound like they were great. I do want to mention that Mandy Dawson in the superintendent's office has published her first book. And I've read about, I'm into it fairly well, and the dialogue is just so alive and real. So I just wanted to mention that and a shout out to her.
Do you have a title, Mr. Buckman?
Great. Oh, not my title?
No.
No, I can't remember that. Kim will tell you the title.
Elemental Awakenings, the first in a trilogy.
Oh,
hello. Fantastic. Congratulations.
And by the way, Kim was the proof editor, so I doubt there's any mistakes in it at all. I'd also like to mention, if you do miss joining CSBA up in Sacramento, Tri-County Education is also going up April 10th. I know Tri-County Ed will meet. I'm sorry. We'll meet with all of the representatives from Ventura, San Luis Obispo, and Santa Barbara counties. And I'm not sure whether she, but we do get to spend time in the governor's office, although not with the governor. And then I'm just going to mention, although we've all been made aware of it, that this Saturday at 11 a.m. out at Rancho El Choro, Gay Galvan will be honored. She's passed, but there'll be, I imagine, there's going to be standing room only out there. And if people don't know, Gay's been a longtime member of the Cuesta College Board, the San Luis County Board, and also chaired the Grizzly Board for many years, and I had the opportunity to serve on the Grizzly Board with her. So she was an amazing woman.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman. That was a nice tribute.
Is it the 25th?
It's Saturday.
Really?
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. I don't usually participate in this readout of events, but I was feeling that I might be considered a slaggard. So I'll go ahead and throw in that Mrs. Sheffer and I attended a boardwalk at C.L. Smith School with Principal Joyce Hansen. And it was a really fun boardwalk. They're doing a lot of innovative things at Smith. And we had an opportunity to learn about some of them. I think Ellen and I both really enjoyed that. I also participated in Read Across America in Catherine Kirby's fourth grade class at Monarch Grove. And then as Mr. Questenberry mentioned, last night the Los Osos Community Coalition, I think it was spearheaded by the Community Coalition, although it was chaired by Reverend Caroline Hall from St. Benedict's Church. It was a well-attended meeting on homelessness and poverty, and I would add that Jennifer Dinelli, principal of Baywood School, was also present there, not because she was required to be. She lives in Morro Bay, but because she is involved and connected to the Los Osos community and cares about her students. And the information that I was able to disseminate on homelessness at Monarch Grove, Baywood School, and Los Osos Middle School, and children in poverty and free and reduced lunch, I got from Chris Dowler on very short notice. He was able to pull that together for me so that I could share it out with members of my community. And that's what I've been up to. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just also had a chance to read for Dr. Seuss Week at Hawthorne, kindergartners. I'm embarrassed to say that I'm a terrible kindergarten teacher, and I whipped them into a frenzy, and then I handed them back to their teacher. And they'll never invite me back again to read, I'm sure. But it was very fun. So we have two items of information yet on the agenda.
Excuse me.
Oh, Mrs. Sheffer, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. I was just going to say, I just pulled up the invitation for Gay Galvin, and it is indeed the 25th, is what it says, at 11 o'clock at Rancho El Choro. So I hope that clears that up.
Thank you for clarifying that. So as item 12.02 is a notice of public hearing for the Personnel Commission budget as for information. And item point 12.03 is a new revised administrative regulations document that is also for information. And we will be seeing everyone again on each other again on the 16th for the Measure D study session, and after that the 21st for the next regularly scheduled meeting at Del Mar. And with that, we bid everyone adieu. Thank you. That system works pretty well.